This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I will always be appreciative for D&M Auto Leasing that I get to have that 5 minutes a day.
Yeah.
And that's why sometimes I just want to stretch it out to 10 minutes if they let me.
Hey, what a great thing that D&M Auto Leasing does. Allowing us to just play around nonsensical for 5 minutes with Payne and Pendergast.
Before we play around nonsensical for 4 hours for four hours. In the loop here on Sports Radio 610.
Such is life.
That's right.
I said that, to Seth yesterday after we got done doing our segment on the 100 people that some online guy picked to fight the gorilla.
That's right.
I said to Seth, I'm like, we're cheating life so bad. Like, yes. We just got paid to talk about a gorilla going up against 100 men for 15 minutes.
That's right.
Yeah. The thing that apparently everybody is talking about, and we just so happen to, you know, get the cash a check.
Yeah, Scott Ole.
Yeah.
I don't want to make it seem like we're not doing work. We're definitely doing some work, Parker.
Yeah.
Don't come in.
Yeah.
Don't work. Talk to me about, yeah, this work.
That's sweat right there on my brow, yeah, you dude, see.
We had to think a lot. About that 100 men versus the gorilla. All right, let's get to actual work here on a Thursday in the loop before somebody come and pull me out this chair. I am Reginald Atatula, that's B. Scott in for the OG John Lopez. Figgy Fig still here with the hair up, tied all nice. Let's get going on a Thursday. As you can tell, the vibes are high.
Yeah.
And that's just because we generally like to have a good time. It's good people here at Sports Radio 610, but also, who am I kidding? The Rockets have staved off elimination, baby.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
It is on to game six as the series rolls on. A victory for your Rockets. Can I call it an emphatic victory considering how it kind of finished up there?
Yeah,
Scott.
Just the fact that you were in position for it to finish the way it did, that you were standing around kind of scratching your head like, why is the 30-point lead now 15, 13, 14? Like, what's going on? But just the fact that you were in that position and in that position for so long, Reggie, they waved that white flag midway through the third quarter.
That's right.
Like, there are people on the other side of this wondering if Steve Kerr quit too soon, if he punted on a chance to close out this series either with his starters late after they, you know, the bench guys came and got them back in the game, or simply just taking those guys out as early as he did. So, I mean, yeah, it's obvious an obvious emphatic victory when the opposing coach is making business decisions like that midway through the third quarter.
Well, I feel like I know someone who agrees with that particular sentiment that you put up there, and his name is Steph Curry. You saw him on the bench, and he looked like he was upset. Like, he looked like he was tapping his foot, trying to stop himself from going over to Steve Kerr and telling him about himself.
As he should, as a competitor. You would expect that, right? Like, this is one of those moments, Reggie, where I would expect the coach and the player to perhaps have different either motivations or different strategies on how to achieve the same goal. Whereas the player is competitive in a different way, the coach has to be more strategic and more cognizant of the long view, which I think is what Steve Kerr was at least trying to do, whether you agree with the decision or not, whereas Steph Curry is just ready to go out there and play.
Yeah, well, I think actually, starting out here just talking about this Rockets game, I think for me, that's definitely one of the answers to this question, which is what was the thing that impressed you most about that huge Game 5 victory for the Rockets? It was a 131-116 win for the Rockets in which they shot fairly lights out. And, of course, these numbers got skewed by an entire fourth quarter that was at one point garbage time and then at another point garbage in a different way. But the idea that you could force a Golden State Warriors team to wave the flag before you even got to the final frame of this, considering how close all of these games, or I guess outside of that other one that they won, right, how close all of these games had been throughout the course of the series, like in the ways in which there was conversations in a 3-1 series that had a tenor and a tone as if you were ready to, you know, get done with the season and, you know, memorialize it in some ways. And they went out there and they played like, you know, bats out of hell, like their hairs were on fire, and they shot the ball incredibly well. There were so many things in that game that felt like they were encouraging, especially in the idea that you put the Warriors in a place where they had to start considering their mortality.
Yeah.
And I say that very intentionally because you were talking about the Steve Kerr decision to bench guys. we're in a point in the series where you're getting games every other day, as opposed to earlier on in the series where you had every 3 days you would have a game. And that is a huge check mark in the benefit of the Rockets, to the point where I know Steve Kerr was like, hey, I got heavy legs. I got hurt thumbs over here. Like, I got to give them the rest of this quarter and see if that maybe helps us close it out in six.
Yeah. So the most impressive thing that I saw from the Rockets last night as a team would be the decisiveness on offense, the fact that – so the big criticism we have with them is it doesn't seem like they always have a plan, or like they always stick to the plan, whatever it might be. So the ball doesn't move enough. They don't move enough. Therefore, their offense gets stagnant. Their spacing gets clunky. And they're over-reliant on either Alperen Şengün in some sort of ISO post situation, or on, say, one of the guards just bailing them out, whether that's Fred VanVleet, Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, Amen Thompson in some cases, what have you. It's like Şengün or bailout. But what else are we going? What are we hanging our hats on beyond just our best player and like a hope and a prayer, so to speak? They were much better in this way. Like, I thought it was similar to game two, where you saw Jalen Green, who is not going to get a lot of credit for this game because he gets hurt early in the game. And statistically, he gives you the least sort of output and production of anybody in the starting lineup. And so you think about Amen Thompson and Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks and what those guys gave you. But I thought early on, to set the tone, Jalen Green amongst the rest of the starters did a really good job of staying connected, making the right basketball play, moving the ball around. And so I thought that set the tone for them offensively, and just the simple fact that they were able to knock down their shots. I would say the other thing that was most impressive, and this would be more of on an individual standpoint, Amen Thompson. Defense.
Oof.
Like, we've talked about it all year, and it became like a really fun talking point for basketball talking heads about Amen Thompson emerging as an all-NBA defensive type of guy, perhaps a defensive player of the year type of candidate. But, and I think that really started happening at the end of the year after he had that performance against Steph Curry, which was probably a little bit overhyped for what it was. It was more of a team performance than I think it was given credit for.
Yeah.
But let's not lose sight of how special this young man is and has been defensively, stripping Steph Curry no less than I've counted 4, 5, maybe 6 times over the last couple of games. He had 5 steals in the first half last night. His defense on Steph Curry, like, it was no accident to me that Steph and Jimmy Butler were something like 3-17 or something like that off memory in the first half. Like, it was bad in the first half, and they were just overall not productive. And it had a lot to do that. That number may be off, but it was something to that effect. And it had a lot to do with, I think, the tone set by Amen Thompson on Steph Curry, and then don't want to lose sight of this, Dylan Brooks on Jimmy Butler. Those two specific matchups one-on-one, and then them overall as a team defensively, has been nothing short of spectacular, especially last night. But I thought even in stretches in Golden State, it was the same way. So those are the things that have impressed me most about the Rockets so far.
Yeah, I think the Amen Thompson one is massive because defensively, like, he is going to take the strongest assignment, obviously, primarily. We know in the modern NBA, it's going to be a team dynamic. There's going to have to be an entire system of what you're trying to do versus that other team that allows you to be successful. But you need the guys who are going to at least start that and force teams to go to the pick and roll and try and look for different matchups and stuff. And Amen absolutely has gotten to that place. Like, we talked a lot, and I know me personally, spent a lot. I took a lot of time talking about the youth that the Rockets come into in the playoffs and how playoff basketball is different than regular season basketball. And it's funny because over the last couple of years, it felt like that was starting to get to a place where playoff basketball wasn't as far away from regular season basketball.
Yeah.
And then this year they decided, no, we are going to restore the feeling. We're going to allow all this physicality. And you see the distinction and the difference between playoff basketball and regular season basketball this year. And it seemed like it took a minute. And Amen has even copped to that. You were there last night at Toyota Center. Like, Amen copped to that. That, hey, he felt like he was starting to get back to how he feels in game four. And then game five, it was a continuation. I think that's a very encouraging thing that gets me to the place where I go, oh, Amen Thompson, as we have come to like appreciate him, as we've come to understand him in this point of his career, he's arrived for these playoffs. And that's really encouraging, not just defensively, but offensively. That was the big thing for me. Like, him being somewhat effective on offense, getting downhill, attacking the basket. And I know he scored 25 points. I need to go back and check how many of that was in, you know, the time periods where the game was where the game was still contested. I know he had 14 in the first half. Yeah. And I know he added some in the I guess more garbage time fourth quarter type portions of this. But man, but getting
more,
him going,
it's more of the style though, right?
Yes.
It's him, it's the confidence, it's him getting downhill, it's him forcing the issue and realizing that he is, you know, athletically superior to the next guy, more than likely whoever's going to be guarding him. It's him shooting the ball. He hit a three early in one of those. It was a three early in the game.
Hey, pull up three.
A little hezzy pull up three, like with a little style on it.
Yes.
Like, hey man, that's for offensive players, not for you, young man. Like don't let that. And I even made this point at the time. Don't let him start hitting shots like that with any kind of regularity, or let that irrational confidence in any way start to be validated by like actual results, because he's taking it more and he's doing it more. So I think for me, Reggie, like it was like a thing that I was not ready to account for until the game happened. Like going into the game, I was not yet ready to account for the growth of Amen Thompson, or the adjustment that Amen Thompson had made from game one up until that point, and just having to figure out playoff basketball a little bit. Like we talked about it a little bit more, I think, with Shingun and Jalen Green. And I think Jalen Green's up and down nature was just a lot easier to fixate on. Of course, you had the Fred VanVleet moments too. So you're talking about, hey, your starting backcourt is giving you this. One of them gave you a 38-point game, and then the rest of the way is giving you single digits. The other one feels like, hey, that's your leader, and he's shooting you out of the game. He's shooting the ball that poorly, to where we were kind of like ignoring Amen Thompson because we don't expect a lot from him offensively.
Right.
And, you know, we'll take whatever we'll take his defensive performance because we know how good he is and he's been fine. But it's like, hey, when you think back on it, slowly it's getting better and better, and it seems like he's getting more confident, or maybe just more comfortable is the better word.
Yes.
With his role and what he's supposed to be doing out there. And again, that's something that I wasn't ready to account for until this game actually happened and I saw it throughout the entirety of a game, or through a stretch of like carryover from the previous game. And now it's got me thinking, okay, is this the mismatch or the matchup that I'm not thinking about enough in terms of what works for the Rockets and what works against the Warriors? Because like defensively, we get it. Steph Curry can be loose with the ball. Amen Thompson can pick your pocket.
Right.
But what if Amen Thompson is getting downhill, shooting middies with confidence and with conviction, and is forcing the issue athletically against a Warriors team that is not all that athletic?
Yeah, and I think that's going to be an intriguing proposition going into game six on Friday in San Francisco. Like, because how much of that is home, like the home cooking of this all, right? The opportunity to be in the familiar confines and have that feeling compared to being on the road at the Chase Center. We'll see how much that is. You mentioned one of the things for me that was incredibly impressive, and one of the things that I saw, I could see the difference in this, was the impact that Fred VanVleet's shooting and how scary that clearly is for a Golden State Warriors defense, how it was paying dividends, right? Because obviously he knocked down 8 3-pointers last game. You saw immediately early on, they go to the pick and roll, the Rockets do, and the Warriors had to respect, and what that did was that got the Rockets back to moving the basketball.
Yeah.
You hit Alperen Şengün on the short roll, and now that ball can find its way around, right? Like, the ball starts moving, the ball isn't static, the Warriors have to react and play active defense, and that drains them some more. Plus, that involves more back cutting, more movement for an offensive team that does not have, like, focal points. They don't have guys that are just like, hey, you offensively, you're going to go beat your man and then beat the second man and go get a bucket, right? Now this becomes more of an offensive proposition where the ball moves around, the ball movement generates opportunity, and you get, you know, guys knocking down open shots. You get Amen Thompson on backdoor cuts and 45-degree cuts, and you get something that felt also very intentional that I enjoyed quite a bit, the secondary portion of this, the clear intentionality with Jabari Smith Jr. to get him the ball on those kickouts. Because me and you have talked about this.
Can we get some more of it?
I think so.
Can we get some more of it?
Like, I hope so, at the very
least.
I
saw it a time or two, but it's not like I'm seeing it still enough. Like, and when you see it, it works. When you see it, it makes so much sense. So I'm right there with you, like, the ball movement, right? It does.
Yes.
It does so much. It's, first of all, it's just flat out better offense. Okay, so check there. But then also the idea of making the Warriors work on defense. since they do so, they do all of these things that we're talking about on offense, setting these screens, running around, moving the ball, moving themselves. Okay, you make them do that sort of work on the defensive end. I think it helps you on the other end of the floor on top of the fact that it's better offense.
Yeah, I agree. And I just loved, I saw them run a specific play for Jabari Smith Jr.
Yes.
To get him the basketball. We saw Jabari Smith Jr. like, it seemed like there was a clear edict that, hey, yes, you're going to look to attack, but when you're trying to kick out, right, when that ball is moving, hey, you know Jabari's over there, right? Get him the basketball. He had 3 shots in the first 11 minutes, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's more than what he was getting in the way that the flow of the game, and I hope that they keep that going because he's been fantastic in the small workload that he's gotten. And in this series, it feels like the margins matter a good amount. That could be a place where you can get a marginal victory.
It is one of my frustrations and one of my criticisms, one of the few that I've had throughout the season. It's like they will tell you, hey, we don't really run plays for Jabari. He's a good enough player to kind of feel the game. Hey, you don't run plays for Jabari? Why not? Draw some up. Start doing that. Like, I get that that's what you're telling me, but, like, stop doing that. Stop not doing that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, he's a good offensive player, a good catch-and-shoot player. We saw even on the play that you're talking about, he puts the ball on the ground for a couple of dribbles to ease into that shot. So, like, let's involve him more in the offense, and I think that the offense is going to look a lot better.
Yeah, maybe, I guess, a bow on all of this, because a lot of these things tie back to, I think that there was a level of confirmation of what Ime brings to this series. Because I think that and don't get me wrong, there were questions in that game, right? Yeah. The ways in which you go to the bench, or maybe you refuse to go to the bench, and then when you did go to the bench, the way that the bench came out,
like, I never mind.
Your decision to challenge a particular foul at the time that you do early on in the game for Ime Udoka, but I still think there were so many things that you look at as a hoop fan from Ime Udoka and go, okay, cool. Those are the things that I know that my coach is bringing to this series, and that was encouraging. As the Rockets win Game 5, push the series to 3-2, still in favor of the Warriors, and stave off elimination to go to Game 6 on Friday at a reasonable time, mind you.
Thank God for that.
Yes, God bless. Yes. And we'll talk more about that as we go along. It is a Thursday here in the Loop right here on Sports Radio 610. B. Scott in for the OG John Lopez. Coming up next, let's get to the Texans. We are a week away from rookie minicamp getting going for these Texans. Who are you most excited to see in rookie minicamp? 713-572-4610. That's the number to text. We'll do that next.